That's why for me, it's not even about party. It's about real solutions and getting it done
right
at the end of the day on what's reasonable and also how to rally support.
What district are you going to represent?
So I'm running in District 31,
okay,
California's congressional district. And then 31, it comprises of 18 cities. So it goes all the way from Laverne, all the way to West Covina, Covina, La Puente, El Monte, even up to Baldwin Park and Azusa. So it's a lot of cities.
Mm.
And, you know, in that mix, there's a lot of Filipino people. There's also a high number of Latinos. It's like a very
right
ethnic mix of people, like a lot of immigrants.
When you win, you're going to Washington. And if you get a bill passed, it's not just for Californians. It's not just for Filipinos. It's for the whole United States, correct?
Yes, that's precisely correct. I'm glad you pointed that out, because speaking to everyone in different cities, like, oh, I live in Cerritos. I live in El Segundo. Mm. How can I vote for you? I'm like, you know what? Even if you can't vote for me, help spread the word. Because
yes,
you get me up there, I represent all the national stuff, and then I also work with all the local leaders.
And the podcast will begin in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Ladies and gentlemen, proud to introduce, I'm proud to say that we will have a Filipino in Congress, Mr. Kurt Jose.
Thank you so much, Paco. It's a pleasure to meet you, and it's an honor to finally be here on your podcast.
Pleasure to have you, and hopefully this is the beginning of your long journey in changing policy, in doing what's best for the country.
Most definitely. I've always been behind the scenes, but now I want to be at the front, empowering all the Filipinos and leading us towards the future and so, getting more representation.
Which is good, right?
Yes.
A while ago, me and Michael, he's our artist relations manager, we were talking. He's like, I have a lot of questions. And I go, what are your questions? And so he listed a plethora of questions with regard to the academe, with regard to what you used to do. A lot of questions. And I was like, I just want to know why he's running. So, let's start there.
Sure.
Why are you running?
I'm running for Congress because over the past few years, I've grown really tired of how politics has always taken priority over people. And in America as a whole, you always hear the left and the right always arguing, and nothing's done.
Mm.
Actually, this 118th Congress is going down in history as the most ineffective one,
yep,
with only 40 bills passed, one of which being removing whole milk and putting 2%. And when it comes to food scarcity all across the U.S., kids don't have a meal, it's important that you know, they receive the nutrition. We're not trying to give them M&Ms for breakfast.
That's right.
But most importantly, I'm running because I want to represent the Filipinos. In the United States, I'm the only one running right now, as far as I know, running for Congress in the entire U.S. And if I do get in, I'll be the first full Filipino in Congress. And, you know, given that we're the largest population outside of the U.S., of Filipinos, I mean outside of Philippines,
yeah,
rather, we don't have that representation. Just like our other Asian brothers and sisters, you know, we're not like people who are Vietnamese, Korean, Chinese. So I really want to come in and I want to bring in and really highlight and strengthen that relationship we have, because we've always been a part of the U.S. We're the fabric of it too. But, you know, it's not that widely known.
Why is that so? Why is it because we're subservient? Why do you think we don't assert ourselves too much?
I think it just starts with relatability and also, you know, seeing the face out there. Like, I was just meeting someone earlier, a Filipino woman inside of a seafood city.
Mm.
And she said, oh, no, I don't want to vote because I don't like any of the presidential selections. And I said, yeah, but, you know, voting goes beyond the president. There's the local, there's everything. And she said, yeah, but what are you going to do for me? And I think that's the same sort of sentiment of everybody. If they don't see it directly impacting them, they don't see a face that's familiar, how can you relate and say, you know, what are they going to do for me?
Sige nga, let's go there, huh?
Mm-hmm.
You understand Tagalog, di ba?
Yes.
Maraming Tagalog or konti lang?
Maraming.
Okay. No, the reason why I'm asking, maganda kasi yung question eh. That question of what can you do for me? Yeah, we're so detached with regard to the presidential election, right? And sometimes when you're in Washington, the fear is you're young, you're passionate, you might get eaten by the swamp, or they might try to elbow you around and try to bully you around. What district are you going to represent?
So I'm running in District 31, okay. California's congressional district. And then 31, it comprises of 18 cities. So it goes all the way from La Verne, all the way to West Covina, Covina, La Puente, El Monte, even up to Baldwin Park and Azusa. So it's a lot of cities. Mm. And, you know, in that mix, there's a lot of Filipino people. There's also a high number of Latinos. It's like a very ethnic mix of people, like a lot of immigrants, immigrant families who are there. So that, district-wise, that's there. Very diverse set, diverse district compared to other districts. So that's the congressional district that I'm in. But this one in particular, I grew up in. You know, I'm born and raised here in L.A. My family, like after all the L.A. King riots, they decided to move further east.
Yeah.
Except the thing is, when they moved further east, it was such a small community. There was less than like 4,000 people. Now there's over like 50 plus thousand people there.
Right.
In the time that I grew up. Being in this district, I've really seen how it's changed. What's been good, what's not been so good lately. And being one of the candidates that actually grew up there, I didn't, you know, move there from another state.
So to answer, to echo that person's, one of your constituents that you met at Seafood City, what can you do for her or him or us in general?
Well, for me, being at the front of it is representing Filipinos on the national level, but also empowering our local communities. Because like myself, growing up, I guess, further east in a smaller community, it was hard for me to connect to like Filipino culture, to Filipino, you know, let's say compared to me growing up in downtown LA or Glendale or somewhere. It was hard for me to connect, like even to programs. So for me, like what I would start with is definitely our youth. Once I'm in Congress, I would start in and work with the consulates. I would work with different organizations to come in and try and promote different programs that we can do to make a nice cultural exchange between the Philippines and U.S. citizens, to empower young Filipino leaders, give them a platform and a voice that's on a national level, not just state or not just city or municipal, something on the more national level, and connecting all of us across the U.S., a unification of sorts, rather than like happening, let's just say, in New York and California and Texas. Now we're going to put everyone together. That would be the one thing. But I would say in particular, if we're hitting more harder issues on the healthcare side in this district, I am the only healthcare advocate. Short history, but when I was 15, I actually worked with the Honorable Mervyn Dimaly. Unfortunately, he passed now.
Yeah.
When I see service, I've learned from all these different individuals. Some of them are also Congressman Dreyer, he used to be congressman in my district, and Senator Feinstein. So like I was bipartisan as it gets. But when I was 15 in Compton and Linwood, we worked on childhood obesity, diabetes, and legislation geared towards removing fast food restaurants within a mile of each other. So like, for instance, you couldn't build McDonald's and then, you know, half a mile later, another McDonald's. So the idea is that the kids in these communities, they're not going to be trapped by the McNuggets.
Right.
Because that's what causes the obesity and diabetes. So luckily I worked with them as their teenage representative, and they actually got the assembly, got it passed. But also Assemblyman Dimaly, I knew him at the time when, ironically enough, he was the one, he's the congressman in my district right now, 31, back in 83. I just learned that recently. What he did for Filipinos back in 83 was the ones who fought in World War II, who didn't have citizenship. He fought in Congress to get them citizenship and get it granted. And he fulfilled that promise.
You know, the epiphany, Kurt, that I'm having while you're talking is, yes, you're running in the state of California. But then again, you're going to Washington when you win. Mm-hmm. Not if you win, when you win. You're going to Washington. And if you get a bill passed, it's not just for Californians. It's not just for Filipinos. It's for the whole United States, correct?
Yes, that's precisely correct. And that's why, for me, I'm doing my best to push as much as I can. And I told everybody, although, you know, this is, I've always been there behind the scenes, but now that you're seeing me out there, I'm not going to stop. This is just the beginning of it all. Because really, that's actually, I'm glad you pointed that out, because speaking to everyone in different cities, like, oh, I live in Cerritos, I live in El Segundo. Like, how can I vote for you? I'm like, you know what? Even if you can't vote for me, help spread the word, because you get me up there, I represent all the national stuff. And then I also work with all the local leaders. So now you've put us all together in one room, and now you have a formidable lineup of people that could handle the national issues. Like, that's why for me, when that person said that, like, what are you going to do? like for me to echo like where what I've learned, my mentors, I would directly impact people from day one. I'm not giving you a promise of 2 years from now. Like I feel the word change, they always say that we're going to change, we're going to transform. But in actuality, it's never acted right. on. Like for me, for example, if we look at one issue in particular, let's say medical debt. Mm. A lot of people face medical debt. You know, even earlier I heard of someone that recently had a major healthcare issue and now they needed to get their fundings because of medical debt. One thing that I would do that's within the powers of Congress is I would go in there and I would tell them, take that off the consumer credit score because that's within the powers to
yes.
do that.
Yes.
Yeah. And now you give the person financial freedom. So if you're someone, you know, which is like most of us, let's say you're living on a day-to-day, I mean, a week-to-week paycheck. Or let's say, you know, you have this major health problem. Now you need a bunch of treatments. At least that way, you have the freedom that's there. But on the healthcare side, I also want to increase the access to life-saving technology.
Right.
Because it's been sitting there. So for instance, like when we look at mental health, is one of the biggest issues now when it comes to homelessness or just in general in the United States, especially past the pandemic. There's life-saving tech out there such as pharmacogenetic testing. Pharmacogenetic testing, I know it's a lot
pharmacogen, okay.
Yeah, but essentially you take the DNA, you sequence it, and you see how you react to medications before it's administered. So for instance, like, you know, you and I were two young gentlemen, like we can see what the reaction is, whether we're going to have, you know, a dry mouth or whether we're going to have headaches or possible kidney failure before we even take the pill. Because the ironic thing about all of this is you take different medications, but, you know, it's one yeah. size fits all. It's not
like it's a shotgun yeah. approach, right? Mm-hmm. I think they're doing that with cancer nowadays, cancer yeah. treatment, right? It's more specific. They're profiling you,
yes.
your DNA, so and your cancer. So that way yeah. they can treat you specifically for what you have, something like that. I'm not, yeah. not an expert, but,
no,
but I get what you're saying.
That's exactly out there. And there's so many of us, you know, when they created these medications, I highly doubt they had 300 Filipinos to study, you know, to make right. the medications. At least this one, it's specific and tailored to you and can help prevent those things. But those are the kind of things I'm looking at. And then also on the healthcare side, looking at healthcare workers, like one thing in California that I was a bit disappointed in is they were supposed to implement higher wages for healthcare workers, but it was put on hold, even though it was approved. That to me, I didn't really agree with, even though, you know, some of it came from the same aisle as my party. That's why for me, it's not even about party. It's about real solutions and getting it done
right.
at the end of the day on what's reasonable and also how to rally support. When I was growing up, seeing everybody, and it sounds funny, he's like a teenager walking around with different people in politics. I see that there's more, you know, camaraderie.
Yeah.
Like you can be in session right now, but after the session, you're all friends.
Yeah.
And I saw that firsthand. Whereas now, goodness.
Now it's too polarized. No?
Yeah. I don't even know what to do. Like I'm running as a Democrat in Congress. I tell that to people, they go, oh. And then I'm like, do you want me to be Republican? They're like, no. I'm like, what do you want me to be? You know, like it's really hard. And then there's some people who go, oh, I'm a Democrat. Oh, thank goodness. You know, but, you know, either way, there's work that needs to be done.
Right.
And it's
right.
sitting there. So.
Now, with regard to bipartisanship, because mm-hmm. growing up, you were exposed to bipartisanship, right?
Yes.
That's a thing now. Eh? It's so polarized, and I'm gonna shine the spotlight on mm-hmm. you. No, when you get to Congress, they're gonna try to say, just stay with us or
yeah.
ignore the other side. Right now you're focused on the agenda, mm-hmm. but both parties, red and blue, they have their own agenda, right? How are you going to prevent yourself from getting sucked into that practice?
So a little side note here is, because I know a lot of your listeners are going to start to get to know me, and also you're getting to know me as well. I'm a grinder. Like everything in my life wasn't really given to me. I had to earn my way.
Amen.
And funny enough, like, you know, I'm already Filipino. I'm already far away from the city. I ended up becoming a lawyer, trained at Oxford University, where I lived in the UK. But I've taken that blessing, and I've also used it. I've worked in other communities. across the globe in other cities. So for instance, I've worked with the London Metropolitan Police. We worked on community policing to improve racial relations on stop and search.
When was this?
Back in 2014.
Okay.
Yeah. And then in regards to the Philippines, I've also done numerous projects working with the barangays. So some of it is access to cancer screening because like I realized that there was an educational gap on the importance of screening, especially for things like such as HPV. So yeah. I focused on that with local ones. Like right now, even though I'm running for Congress, we actually have a project out there where we're focused on bringing in smart cities and focus on entrepreneurship programs for small businesses. You know, when I mean small businesses, I really mean the small businesses.
The like mom and pops. Yeah.
The woman selling balut.
Yes.
The person selling taho. And actually the funny thing about that is...
Can you say that again?
Taho. So actually, on another note about the Tagalog, I tried to speak as much as I can when I was a kid. But my little cousins, when I would arrive, and I visit Philippines a lot when I'm little, I would try to talk because my mom and dad would teach me some words and then they go, oh, like they, you can't talk. And then to add to that, they go, oh, taba. And
oh
then I go, what? And then when I learned what that word was, I was already kind of a big kid. So I said, you know what? Forget it. I'm not even going to talk to you. There's no diplomacy. I'm going to chase you. So I would chase them. And then I never learned.
where are you from in the Philippines, though?
So my mom's side is from Bulacan.
Okay.
And my dad's side is from Mindanao, Siargao. Yeah, so I have like...
Have you been to Siargao?
No, that's the part where I have actually a grudge with him because I haven't been there yet.
Dude,
that's... All I do, I actually joke the past couple of years. I said, you know, when people ask me, how do you find the Philippines lately? I said, well, lately, the past few years, it's really great. I see Naiya Terminal 2.
Yeah.
I see the NLEX and the SLEX, and then I'm gone. Like, there's not, I try to explore as much as I can, but then I get stuck. And then only having like, you know, a few days at a time, it's hard for me to see so many things.
Siargao is happening, no?
Yeah.
Oh my God. Okay. So let's go back, huh?
Yes.
Because you're all over the place. Like your degree, your extracurricular activities,
yeah.
Your passion, and you're not even 40.
No, not
you're
yet.
Young.
Yeah.
You're also the youngest in your family, right?
Yes. I am. I'm indeed the youngest. And
how many siblings?
Just two. We're just two siblings.
Oh, you and your sister?
Yeah, it's just us two.
How is it growing up with your sister?
Well, we also have quite a good gap between us. But I will say, as a little kid, I guess I was like a little terror, running around causing problems. And then, funny enough, it doesn't make sense. Even as a little kid, I didn't like going to school. I know that doesn't make sense now. But there's a funny thing about that.
I want to hear it, yeah.
When I was a kid, they dropped me off in first grade. I actually ran, hopped the fence, and the janitor grabbed me and locked me in the bathroom for the rest of the day. So, and it only turned around for me, I think, when I'm 9, because my principal handed me everyone got an award. You know, when you're little, you get an award, best in math, best in, you know, music. And she handed me a medal, and I said, or no, a certificate. And I said, it was blank. I said, so what am I good at? And I'm not even joking. She said this. I don't know. You figure it out. I just have to give you one. And I said, what?
Wow.
So I said, oh.
Wow.
Okay. So, you know, it might sound a little weird, but from that point I said, okay, I'm going to turn it on. And I was only in fourth grade. And yeah. I guess I started liking school because the competitive spirit kicked in. So I said, okay, let me show you what I can do. So, but yeah, like with everything, kind of circling back to earlier, I may be new to politics, but I'm not new to working in communities. Like here in the United States, I work a lot in California. I work a lot in Illinois, Wisconsin. We do a lot of stuff for community outreach and, I've been doing that for so many years, but it's taking that same mentality.
Well, what pushed you to do community service?
What really pushed me is the fact that I can see the difference you make in people's lives.
Oh, hold on. Let me go back. Huh? Remember, principal gave you a blank certificate, right? Oh, let me show you what I can do. Then you did well in school. You could have stopped there, right? But then again, you pushed it outside of school. So I'm trying to get inside your head because mm-hmm. because you know they, I mean if people guys go to Kurt's website because everything is there. Actually, Michael and I did an extensive research. We just don't want to throw everything at you, right? But yeah. Very, very impressive. But I want to hear your context of being who you are. Okay, so blank certificate. Now you've proven that you can do good in school. What pushed you to make a change in the community at 15?
At 15. Honestly, it was the fact that you can make a difference and you didn't need to be an adult. You didn't need to be, you didn't need to be in a position. It's called just taking the initiative.
But PlayStation, there was a PlayStation, there was Sega. I mean,
I did use that.
Okay.
And the funny thing is because of me doing this, I also missed a lot of days in high school. So that actually is another funny point too. In my junior and senior year, I missed so much high school that my vice principal, a new one, sat me down and she said, "Hey, you're missing so much school. Do you know if you were here, you'd do better?" But back then, I didn't really care for too much diplomacy. I answered in a pretty bad way. I said, "Well, you know, if you would give higher grades, then I'll be here." And she said, "What did you say?" And I said, "I'm sorry, I didn't mean that way." So then she told me, "Oh, you know, if you don't have an excuse slip, you're going to be in Saturday school every Saturday, you know, for 6 hours.
But see, that rebuttal is actually the start of your motivation.
Yeah.
If you would give high grades, you'd see more of me. Yeah. And now here you are, right?
Mm-hmm.
Trying to represent the district into pushing the same mentality that you've had since you were young,
yeah.
Which is not only championing yourself, but the people that you represent.
Yeah.
Diba? Okay. So this person who had this smart aleck attitude,
yeah.
Is that why you went into law? Because you like to argue?
No, funny enough, I love basketball growing up. I love even acting. But my parents told me, "Hey, acting is not going to," at the age of 10, they're like, "Acting's not going to do anything for you. Go do something else." But that's not why I went into law. I went into law because I said, "Hey, this is going to give me the tools to achieve what I want to do." Because even
which
before,
is acting?
No, which is actually my grandpa used to tell me. I said, "Oh, I'm going to become a lawyer." He's like, "Oh, you want to become a liar?" I'm like, "No." I said, "A lawyer." He's like, "Yeah, I know, a liar." And funny enough, he used to joke with me. He's like, "Well, didn't you just become a priest if you want to influence people?" And I said, "Yeah, but that's a little limited." I said, "This has a smaller audience. I want to go bigger." But for me, like, I saw law as like a means of like giving me the training, giving me like the expertise to take on the hard issues. Because before I actually moved to the UK, that's when I worked for the, of course, 15 and then right. to 17, 18, I worked in like all this public service.
Yes.
And I really saw, wow, hey, if you know how to do this and you know how to unpack the laws, you can then start to change it for people because now you...
Can you repeat that? Because that would be nice for our audience to pick up. If you can.
So what I learned was if you unpack the laws and you have the motivation and you join the two together, you can actually be an agent for change and be an effective one. Because I feel like that's why people get left behind is because, hey, they're not educated about it. No one tells them about it or no one reaches out to teach them or you know, spread information about things. So then you get lost in the process. And that's why I understand if you don't want to be involved in like politics or law because you're like, oh, what's it do for me kind of thing. And that's why I went into law. Because I saw, hey, you know what? Working in the congressman's office, we were working on immigration cases. We were working on, at that time, it was the mortgage crisis. So right. people were losing their homes. And funny enough, I was the youngest in the office at 17. Everyone else was like 20 and above. And wow. I solved a lot of cases to the point that people, at the time, edible arrangements, you know, those,
yeah.
they were new. So they were the hottest item. I would have like 5 in the office, all addressed to me. Not even the congressman, they're addressed to me. But then everyone in the office ate it. So they're like, "Hey, young gun, good job. Here's a card. We ate your food." I was like, "Oh, that's terrible." I said, "Can I at least have, you know, a pineapple?" No, not for you. They're like, you learned the pecking order here that you're the youngest. I'm like, yeah, but I'm the most effective one. They're like, yeah, that doesn't matter.
You know? See, that's going back to Washington, the pecking order, right? Yeah. How are you going to get past the hurdles of the,
oh yeah, so
the Pelosi's, the shifts, the, you know, and I heard when you're new, they make you do phone calls for the donors and yeah, all that stuff, right?
Mm-hmm. So for me, the difference is when I go to DC, I'm not necessarily a new face because I work with a lot of the legislators there, especially out in Illinois and around California. So I'm not a completely new face to them. But the difference between me that I can promise everybody, if they, you know, put their faith in me, you're going to get someone who's a firm negotiator. It's actually how I got my first job.
Amen.
So in law school, I won a negotiation competition. We beat like 100 other Oxford lawyers. And in that, through that academics and even in life, in business, I became like a really firm negotiator. Because part of it is I understand that there is compromise and we do need that today, mm-hmm, but compromise without sacrificing your principles. And for me coming in, I don't plan to be that member or representative who's going to say, oh, you know what? You have to be quiet. You got to be with the party. I'm like, yeah. But at the same time, I don't think we got to bring this out. And one difference between me, no matter kind of which room you put me in, I feel like members of Congress are just like anybody else. And I kind of share with people, like, let's say you're stuck at an airport. Who do you want to talk to every day? Like, do you want to talk to the person that, like, if a stranger is next to you, do you want to talk to them? I'm kind of those people that, hey, if I'm sitting there and we end up talking, pretty soon we're going to end up talking and laughing, kind of like how we are here. And that's the same mentality I bring into Congress, is when the work needs to be done, we get the work done. But at the same time, you're probably going to get along with me, and we're going to make things happen. Because I understand, I think from having like such a diverse experience of being in so many different places, I have an understanding of like just who people are and like what makes you tick, what makes you feel happy. And from there, we can kind of, I think it's most importantly, it's finding the commonality,
yeah,
with each other, whether you're Republican or Democrat. Like part of one of the main messages that I've been really pitching to everybody is, because like I said earlier, you know, Democrat, oh gosh, Republican, oh gosh. Like everything is, oh,
I'm like, what am I? Oh gosh.
Yeah. I was like, you know, whether we're red, we're blue. At the end of the day, for everyone, we're red, white, and blue.
Yeah.
We're all a part of America.
Yes.
And whatever that vision is. So that's why I have, like, I think in my race, I'm one of the more unique ones that's really pushing for unification, really pushing for, like, diplomatic measures, pushing for peace. Because those sides are achievable if we just really listen. And I think that's the problem. No one's really listening nowadays. And it's showing.
What else is on your platform? So you mentioned a while ago off cam, mm-hmm, for the nurses, for healthcare professionals. What else?
So outside of healthcare, I'm really focused on education reform. I'm focused on...
Explain education reform. That's interesting. Yes. Yeah.
So in education reform, like, see, this is where you see the difference. Today's Democrat, they're probably going to be like, oh, he's going to go in there and censor my schools, teach my children something I don't want them to learn. No, for me, when I think of education reform, I look at high schools and colleges, and I'm really about financial literacy, electives and investment, and entrepreneurship.
Yeah.
Yeah, because nowadays, the kids of today, they have this digital platform that we're in. They can become their own business person,
yep,
whether they want to start a successful podcast like you, whether they want to go and, you know, sell hats that they've embroidered themselves. But at the same time, how do you harness that passion and allow them to sustain it? Because yes, there's passion, but then there's also the harsh realities of like, oh, I got to pay this bill, got to pay that bill. Mm-hmm. So my emphasis on education is implementing courses to tackle real life challenges.
Yeah, you know, it's true. Huh? Yeah. Because right now they're still teaching us the industrial way of educating you because of the industrial revolution or the industrial era, yes, right? And they're prepping you to be a worker.
Yeah.
What you're saying is, let's change it, let's reform in such a way, let's add curriculum to, maybe this person wants to be an entrepreneur, this, yeah, person wants to be a music mogul, this person wants to be blah, right? Mm-hmm.
Something and like that. Really bringing that out, but then also at the same time, knowing how to tackle the real problems you have as an adult, like, you know, how to handle your bills, how to balance your own checkbook. I feel like my generation and the generations after us, it's kind of hard for us to be as fiscally responsible as, let's say, our parents or our grandparents, because that kind of faded. So I want to bring that in. And also on the education reform side, like nowadays you always hear, oh, loan forgiveness. Like when I look at loan forgiveness, I know that's a hard topic because a lot of the burden goes on the taxpayer.
Yes.
And for me, my vision of like some form of giving financial relief is almost similar to the medical debt. We take the college student debt and remove it off the consumer credit score. Once again, it's also within congressional powers. But then at the same time too, if we're going to be putting, and you know, let's say my colleagues are like, no, Kurt, we really want forgiveness. Okay, let's get the wealthy universities in on it. Because as you know, there's so many wealthy universities who drive the cost.
Yeah.
And every year they're setting that bar higher and higher, and people are priced out of an education. So for me, I see that reform as we hold them accountable. I'm going to hold them accountable to pay their fair share and not just put it on the taxpayers. But part of that financial literacy is also so you have this new generation of people that know how to be financially smart. And we also put investment into trade and vocational schools so that people can be trained, certified in a variety of jobs.
Yes.
Like, and contribute to the workforce so that they're not, you know, left out. But also in regards to all of this, the idea behind it is really empower them and change the culture of how we run so that the roots of education really grow in the U.S. Because right now it's been declining, sadly. Our competitively around the world, we're not, America is not as the way it used to be in regards to the education front. Like, yes, we have the leading researchers, we have the leading tech, but at the same time, our children are also suffering from it. So it's just being more innovative, and it's suffering because of like overcrowding, teachers' wages, things like that. So that's why for me, I propose like community-driven solutions to help them fix it, because the federal government can come in and help some schools that may not have the same amount of funding. Right. Yeah.
Teachers' wages, you mentioned that. Why are they not as competitive as they have to be? I mean, you don't have kids yet. Do you have kids?
No, not
at the moment. Don't have kids yet, right? No. I have kids. Michael has kids. It's hard to raise kids, especially if you give them to the teacher. Teacher has to have what? Like 30 to 35, 40 students.
Yes.
Right?
Sometimes even more.
Even more.
Yeah.
I mean, she has that for the whole day. She has those kids. And then she sees her paycheck. It's just blah.
Mm-hmm.
Explain that. Like, speak to the teachers, because I have friends who are nurses, friends who are teachers. And it's the same thing. They're like, I don't want to be a teacher anymore because my wage isn't that competitive compared to others. But then again, the advocacy of being a teacher is, you have to have the heart to be able to do that, right?
You do.
What can you do for them?
And I honestly respect teachers because, funny enough, I taught university students myself for like 3 years. So maybe not the young kids, but I taught definitely the older kids also while being very close in age to them, which made it interesting. But at the same time with them, I would focus for teachers. I understand where they're coming from, like having, you know, lower wages and not enough support because, like you said, 40 students, sometimes they have 60. But I think one lesson that could be learned from the pandemic is that there's innovative ways we can put in the classroom. But at the same time, the money is there. It's just a matter of working with community leaders and also the federal government, like such as people coming myself and saying, hey, when we examine your budgets, what's wrong? Why are we not getting support for some of these teachers? Because high stress, especially amongst children, all the different pressures they have is real. It's a real thing. But I think teachers should also have assistants who come in and help support them in the class. And then we also examine new ways of how we can create programs where, you know, as a temporary solution, at least handle the amount of students you have and give them some sort of individualized attention.
Yeah.
Because that's also why we're declining, is schools are overcrowded. Teachers, sadly, want to leave the profession or change. And we're not doing our best to incentivize them to stay. And I think if we find ways to incentivize them to stay, not only by increasing wages, but also changing the environment they're in, it's going to, you know, bring back the love for teaching and the reason why they want to be there. Because I'm not discrediting any teachers at all. I know they all want to be passionate. But I understand it's really hard it's when hard. You're teaching 60, you know, 40, 50 kids at a time.
Right.
Especially if they don't want to listen.
So, right. Yeah. Oh, my God.
But I think it starts with there is giving a really good working environment and also a supportive one. Because at the same time, just one teacher for that many kids is not a lot. But if you have an assistant there, like a TA who can come in and, you know, deal with certain issues, let's say, you know, kids are having problems at home.
Yes.
Want to address like youth mental health. Having a trained professional there helps. But then let's say it's just little things, like just solving little fights.
Yeah.
Because right now, at this day and age, really teachers are important because the problem we're having with social media, the promotion of digital material, kids learning online, is it's hard to see what they see in a way. And I mean,
it's even hard to monitor them, right?
Yeah, it's hard. So that's why, you know, we kind of need to be in there and help bolster the needs that are there. So
there's education reform, healthcare worker reform, and healthcare reform. What else?
So I'm also like more in my district. I'm definitely about local economic development, like with small businesses.
Yeah, you mentioned that a while ago. Yes. The mom and pop talk. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, so for me with the local economic development, I'm really about highlighting, actually I even call it LED, like an LED bulb, because the idea behind it is illuminating the local businesses. Because one thing I saw in the pandemic, people lost their business, you know, a lot of the aid that went there from federal didn't make it to the small business. It went to like the person.
The big ones.
Yeah. Let's say a small business is a franchise owner of Chipotle.
Yeah.
That's not really that small business. So
he probably just paid the franchise fee for the year to Chipotle.
Yeah. And it's forgiven, you know. So for me, I'm focused on expanding the SBA programs to have community outreach, but also empowering minority-owned businesses, especially like Filipino-owned businesses.
Right.
Because there's so many of us in the community that are the real small mom-and-pop shops, and they don't have a lot of support. But one thing that is unique to my platform is I am focused on the immigration aspect. So in regards to the immigration aspect, I want to fast-track visa applications and create a strong network of industry partners, whether they're national, local, or even citywide, so that let's say we have people who have been here in the country for a while, but their legal status is, you know, in question.
In limbo.
Yeah. We can fast track visa applications for them so that they have at least a temporary work permit and they're not waiting. Because we also, at the which you might know talking on this podcast, there's Filipinos out there that are not getting a living wage. They're being taken advantage of, sometimes even by fellow Filipinos.
How about this?
Yeah.
I'll share something with you and maybe the audience. You know, I mean, it's an open secret that there are immigrants without papers who would use someone else's social security number.
Yeah.
And you mentioned about being taken advantage of. They have to work. There's nothing we could do.
Yeah.
They bring in a social security number that's not theirs. They pay taxes. They don't get any refund.
No.
Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
I mean, that's sad. Yeah. That's sad for the worker, sad for everybody involved, sad for the identity that was stolen.
Person identity, yeah. All across the board, it's making a big mess of people. Right. Because at the same time, some of those people who are going through that, now they're older. Maybe they were doing this 20, 30 years already.
Oh my God, yeah.
And 40 years even. So that's why for me, a lot of like the local economic development is centered on that. A lot of it is also into job training, like investing in a lot of job training in the area and also investing in like the green economy, bringing a diverse amount of jobs. But in my district in particular, I'm really about healthcare centers because where I live, like some people out there who, let's say you live in Pasadena or you live in Glendale or you live in LA, you have easy access to hospitals.
Or urgent care.
Yeah, urgent care. Mm. In my district, that's really hard. Like I actually went to a meet and greet in West Covina and I was actually telling people, I said, if there is an emergency right now, like hopefully not, the nearest emergency room is very far from here. Because I even drove down the street and there was a hospital that said no emergency services. So they're basically just like a big doctor's clinic.
Right.
And for me, that's what I ultimately care about is developing the cities in that way, and also bringing more people in to each city in the district, like highlighting what it is, whether it's tourism, because also the Olympics are coming here in 2028. Mm. And part of the rowing is going to be happening in Benelli Park, which is in my district.
Yes.
So you're going to be getting people in here. So why is all the development happening in just downtown LA? Why is there no development in our areas and finding ways to improve our communities?
Including Raging Waters. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, exactly.
Part of the district.
Yeah, Raging Waters is part of the district.
Right? Why does it have to be this? No, just kidding.
Yeah, no, but it's true. Like, you want to get people to visit.
Yes.
Like, I see certain cities in my district and I'm like, why are the businesses closing? You know, what's going on?
Right.
And when I learn what's going on, you really start to see, oh, now we know. Like, sometimes they're missing workers. Sometimes, you know, they are still recovering from the effects of the past few years. And that's what I listen to. And that's what I've been hearing on what I can do to bring a formidable agenda to represent them in DC.
Your competition, mm-hmm. are they as young as you?
No, I'm definitely the youngest.
We need young blood, no?
Yeah. I actually feel the next youngest person might be like in their late 50s, I think, if I can recall correctly.
Wow.
So wow. I'm definitely the youngest one there in the race.
Okay, so what else is on your platform? I want to get it all out, mm-hmm. so that way when we disseminate the information, everything's just...
So platform-wise, it's centered on those three major pieces. But I am, in regards to like other parts of it, I guess it's more of like what's my stance on certain issues.
Let's talk about that.
Because, like, for instance, at a recent forum, someone asked me, like, what about child safety online? Like, you know, is that in your education or what is that? And when I think about child safety online, like, I'm sure you heard about all the recent hearings that the Senate's been having about Meta, Facebook. So with that being said, like, when I was a researcher out in Oxford, my specialty was actually cyber crime. And within that, cyber harassment, cyber stalking, things like those, of those nature. And when I started to unpack everything, I said, if you were actually being harassed right now, teenager or adult, how can you actually go and fix this for yourself? Like, let's say someone put a bunch of embarrassing images. Mm-hmm. And the hard part is all these social media companies, they're scattered everywhere. Netherlands, Ireland, you know. And now you're serving legal notices. You actually need to have someone serve legal notices to get it removed.
You know that the agreement of all these social media platforms actually say that if you post a picture, they pretty much own it.
Yeah.
Right? You can. It's like now they can do whatever they can, mm-hmm. whatever they want to do with it.
And the thing that's bad about that is, and I understand what Congress is trying to do, but because of that inaction, we're kind of where we're at right now. And now it's getting worse because you have AI. So now people are starting to distribute AI-made images of people.
Right.
Like just yesterday, there was a problem at a middle school not too far from here. You know, they were distributing AI nude photos school kids. Yeah. And, you know, before the worry is, are they going to look up bad things online? Now they're making AI images of their kids. And the problem with all of this is the social media companies put it on the parents and the children to self-regulate themselves. And the way I look at it is it's like the paradigm of seatbelt and car. What did we do there? We really focused on the seatbelt, but we also focused on the cars itself.
And yes.
Put measures. So that's why for me, it's not, as a member of Congress, I'm not just going to be grilling the tech companies, you know, I mean the social media platforms. I'm going to be grilling the device makers too, because in regards to surveillance marketing, I don't know, just for the viewers out there, in regards to surveillance marketing,
oh my God,
they have so much data on us. Yeah. Like right now, I can be like, Paco, I want to
say something.
Yeah, I want Bibinka.
Okay. There you go. That's going to pop up on the phone.
After we're done talking, we're going to probably find all the different places to find it. And, you know, that comes from the behavioral marketing and everything.
Yeah.
So when they tell me, oh, you know, there's not much we can do about it, you know, we'll try our best. Come on now.
BS.
You guys have it within your power to do it. And the hard part about it is the way to push them and compel them is through law. And that's what I learned. That's why it kind of goes back to like how I used law as a tool to change things. When you look at the laws of the United States in regards to social media, they're not modernized. They're still dating back to the 80s before the internet being, like, became a thing.
Yeah, being dealt with as what was that? Oh my God, they talked about that. That's why they were trying to change it two Congress sessions ago, three. Mm-hmm. 240 or something. It was, oh my God, it escapes me. Because they were trying to put TikTok in a box. They couldn't, yeah. Right?
They couldn't because the laws are not there.
Yeah.
So that's why, like, as like being in Congress, being on that platform, that's what I would do, is we start to propose bills. You get people from all across the aisle, Republican, Democrat, Independent, doesn't matter. Let's start getting these bills to protect children, because I'm pretty sure we can all agree we want to protect children. That's one thing I would hope everyone can agree on. And we go from there and we start to do that, because even some of these members of Congress, they've also experienced what social media can do to them.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, at the same time, we're going to respect First Amendment rights and freedom of speech, especially for like the LGBTQ community. That's one important thing, especially for children, that I would look at in particular. But at the same time, we have those mechanisms that could now help them. And, you know, don't leave it on the parent to regulate this. Don't leave it on the children. You know, they're a part of the conversation and a part of making it happen. But when you hold them accountable, now they really have to sit down and listen. Because now when right. they see, hey, there's a legal law that's pressing us, what do we do? And there's states out there that are doing that. Like, I think there's Texas and Oklahoma, but this is where the federal government can come in. We now unify that and make it, a federal law. And that's where I think these companies will start to listen and take it seriously.
Yeah, that's a serious thing. Because right now, when I was watching the whole thing on Meta, on TikTok, on X, I mean, it was more a scripted answer to Congress. I'm like, oh my God.
A lawyer devised it.
There's no empathy.
No, there's none.
Right?
And that's why for me, even running in Congress, a lot of the policy that I want to put in and a lot of my agenda is built towards being humane, being more empathetic. Because at the same time, all these things I'm mentioning, I went through this myself. And, you know, I'm not saying that because every politician says, oh, you know, I understand where you're coming from. No, I really do. Like when it comes to, like when I talk about healthcare centers on my platform, I lost my grandpa in 2022. And he was thank you. And he was in a small community hospital in San Dimas. They weren't equipped to handle levels of trauma. And, you know, it took hours before he could get help. And also at that time, being COVID, a lot of the ICUs were closed. So for me, I really saw the lack. And it wasn't the fault of the doctors or the nurses there. You know, they don't have the facilities to handle that. And when I started looking at it more, I said, wow, there's really not a lot of facilities that could handle it. Like for him, he ended up all the way out in LA. They had
from San Dimas.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God.
All the way out in LA. And I learned that firsthand. And even during the pandemic, actually the reason why I keep mentioning the pandemic too is because I really saw firsthand where this whole politics over people really happened. You know, small businesses closing because they don't have the right access to information. And I believe that's the wrong thing that happens. Is access to information. Because when people don't have that access, that outreach, that example, that model, you know, how do we expect them to guide themselves? You know, how do you guide yourself in a dark room?
Okay.
Kind of thing.
Question. You're representing the district, but on a national scale, right?
Yes.
How does what you do disseminate down to the local in an instant, or is that something that takes time? Just to go back to the person you bumped into at Seafood City, right? How does the information travel up, and how does it go back down to the community?
It goes back down, because that's why I focus on solutions that can happen from day one, because I know the different things that I'm crafting or I have in my mind not only are reflective of what I want to do, but it's also reflective of what people care about. And on the national level, when you're able to propose those bills and get it passed, like let's say within the first 3 months, we're getting it passed, you know, first 6 months, whatever it may be. Now that becomes, and signed into law, now that's a federal law. So now we wait of course, one year for it to be implemented, the following calendar year. Now it's implemented. And then now you could then use that as a model with the local people, whether it's assemblymen, whether it's state senators, whether it's governor. Now we have a federal law to interact with, because at the same time, states have their own independence to form what they want to do. But the federal law also comes in and helps influence what's going on. And when there's a federal enforcement behind it, now it's faster for it to implement. You know, we don't always have to wait for a ballot measure to kick in. You know, like, let's say Prop 1 or whatever it may be. We don't have to wait for a ballot measure to be voted on. We can now put it in.
Yeah.
And, you know, I would hope that with the solutions that we're coming up with, I would also not be just be focused on colleagues in Washington. I'd be focused on colleagues at the state and city level, because that's one thing where that's actually why I chose Congress too. Like, a lot of people are like, why not city council? Why not, you know, mayor? Why not, you know, board of education? And to them, I say the reason why I went for this is because it's a unique one. You're on the national level, and you also have to pay attention on your local district itself, which is a mixture of state, regional, and things like that. So that's why, you know, leveraging those two positions together, that's how you can make it happen. And if you're not getting that support or even listening to the local community, then you just become fully disconnected. And that's evident in people in my race who have been politicians for so long. And that's why I hear from people like, you know, what are they doing for me? Mm. And when I start to really hear that, I go, yeah, you're right. They're not really doing much for you. Because you don't even know their names. So, And I feel like the people in your district, you should know their name. If you don't know their name, that means they're not doing it for you.
Right.
You know, it's up to them to go out, not for you to get to know them. So that's how I look at, like, my role in this.
Okay. How long did it take for you to decide that you were going to run?
If I'm being perfectly honest, it took me some time to run. I always knew I wanted to run.
Since when?
Actually, I feel kind of bad. I told this while I was when I was 18. So the people in the office asked me, and I think I might have even told
this. This was before going to the UK.
Yeah. They asked me, because I loved the job so much of what I was doing as a caseworker. And I think I might have also said a little smart thing. But they said, what job do you want in the future? And I said, I want the congressman's job. And they're like, what?
I said, which is good, right?
I mean, and I said, yeah, I want the job. And then they're like, okay, they were laughing. They said, well, you know, when he retires, maybe he'll endorse you. But he retired before I could even get back here. So, because of course they redistrict.
Yes.
People change. But for me, there. But then more in particular, recently, I've been looking at doing this since maybe like 2019. But for me, being new to this whole political game, it's also a learning experience. So at the same time, you know, it's been a fun learning process, but I also see now what I need to do to become more effective. But in terms of running, no, this has been in my mind for a while. It's actually funny. The people I call, they get shocked. They're like, oh, you're the candidate? I go, yeah, I'm the candidate. You're calling yourself? Where's your lawyer? Where's your accountant?
Right.
I said, yeah, but that's the difference with me. I like to really be hands-on, to the point that people on my team have been telling me, hey, stop it. Be the candidate. I'm like, yeah, but I want to... No. Be the candidate. So in my nature, I'm really like that. Like, I'm really hands-on with everything, but at the same time, I feel like that's become the reason why I can understand what's going on.
And that makes you unique. I mean, you're mm-hmm. you're in touch with the community.
Yeah.
As opposed to your campaign manager or your team. You're the guy that's going to Washington pretty much, you know.
Yeah. Funny enough, this is a little funny side note, like, for the viewers, like, who go, oh my gosh, he's a Democrat. I don't want to listen to him, you know. Hopefully you didn't turn off yet. but funny, I've been working so many years in Illinois, out in the Chicagoland area. And we do a lot of community things, whether it's, you know, raising awareness for blood banks, or whether it's, you know, different healthcare issues, like with the universities. And what's hilarious is there's a group of representatives that I work there, because I was also helping them with, like, getting more insurance coverage for people, so that different, you know, they're not removed for pre-existing conditions. It was to increase the coverage, especially for people on lower lower incomes. Because, you know, the insurance company will be like,
You had this? Oh, yeah. Can't take you there.
You're 10 pounds overweight? Okay, your insurance goes up $100, you know? Yeah. So I was helping them fix those kinds of issues, like just as like on the policy side. And it's funny, a lot of them are Republican. I didn't even realize that. They approached me and they said, hey, Kurt, you know, we want someone from, we want you to run with the Republican Party and we'll support you here. I said, yeah, but I don't really live here. I live in California. And then they said, oh, that's okay. Like, you know, start living here. And then I was like, then they asked me the next question. What's your party registration? And I said, oh boy. I said, I'm a Democrat. And then they go, what? And I go, why? Is that going to change our friendship now? And then they were laughing.
Did it?
No, it didn't. I hope not, unless they just lied to my face. No. But, you know, no, it didn't. Like, they were actually helpful. And they said, although we can't really support you in your race at home, because that would be like really bad for us.
Yeah.
They said, you know, we want to see you do well. And for me, a lot of it coming home was like really taking care of everyone, the community that I grew up in.
But you know what's nice? Healthcare. Doesn't matter if you're Democrat or Republican.
No.
Education. It doesn't matter if you're Democrat or Republican, right? Social media. It doesn't matter if you're Democrat or Republican. Yeah. Small business. Doesn't matter if, dude, you're doing everything.
Thank you.
I really do hope that everything you profess today really comes into fruition.
Yeah.
We need it.
And that's really what I care about is, you know, at the end of the day, it's being able to improve the community. Because one thing is, even though I am new to this whole aspect of politics, every community I've been in, whether I've lived there for a few years or wherever, my goal in life is leave it better than when I arrived. And this one has been where I've been the longest and where I really grew up. So that's why the motivation is there. And then also when I think of Filipinos as a whole, throughout my own personal experience, I got disconnected from things as well.
Right.
But at the same time, I also grew tired of, like, when you think of Filipino people, there's so many people that put stereotypes in there. They make it like a joke, but they don't understand like just how significant our people are to American history, to even to today.
Yeah.
And at the same time, that's why I really want to come out there. And I ask everybody, you know, a year or two from now, or actually, well, next cycle is 2 years, I don't want to be the only candidate. I want to see people all across the U.S. coming out. You know, let's join together. Let's do this. Because I, like, even someone brought up earlier, like, why are you taking politics so seriously? Like, when I was just speaking to different people today and over the weekend, I said, because, you know, it's a means to actually change things.
Right.
Like, how do you change things if you're just at home and we get mad at the TV? We're not going to change anything. And change doesn't even just happen by being, you know, a lawmaker. It also happens by getting out on your phone, spreading the word, raising awareness of things. And growing up, I really grew tired of some people. And I respect all the professions that people are in. But like you go, let's say you're a Filipino in healthcare or you're a nurse. I'm like, not everyone is a nurse. And I'm like, if you look at the history of why there's so many Filipino nurses in World War II, after the Pearl Harbor attacks when the U.S. entered the war, World War II, they thought that they were going to get a shortage of people in the profession. So that's why, you know, they were encouraging all these programs for nurses, doctors, everything. But not only that, the Filipino people themselves, we're people that really want to go out there and push the limits. We never actually said, oh, we're just going to stay at home. It's okay. We want to be educated. We want to like learn. We want to be a part of it. That's why now for all the people who feel like they're silent, I'm like, no. Let's rally around each other and let's go. Let's bring that Kababayan spirit together and bring it here. Show it. Make it proud. Because when you look at our Asian brothers and sisters, everybody has a lot of representative. Like when you go to Orange County, there's a lot of Vietnamese, there's a lot of Cambodian. Korean represents, Cambodian. You go to Los Angeles, it's Koreatown, Chinese, Korean.
China, yeah.
Yeah. And that's why I'm like, where are we? We're here. We're with them. So we should have a louder, you know, a louder voice.
And we don't have to apologize for it.
No, we don't have to. And that's what I that also disheartens me too, is like when people, you know, make it a novelty. like, in a way, we're proud of our professions. We're very proud people, but at the same time, we're more. We're more. And I want to tell people we're more. My statement in running is not just here in Los Angeles County. It's not just California. The message I want to send is worldwide. Because like one little note I'll share is, even before I went to law school, I actually had a project which caused a little bit of friction. I wanted to work to provide legal protections for OFWs overseas. And I was actually speaking to the US State Department and the Philippine State Department. And it was supposed to be like as a researcher, so I can be a more diplomatic role. But both of them are like, no, you're going to cause problems for us. So that's why I ended up in law school, because I was going to take a year off and do that and like help and provide legal protections for people. But they were like, no.
And you know what? Filipinos need that. I digress. Yeah. But, you know, yeah, we do need that.
Yeah.
People take advantage of Filipinos worldwide.
Mm-hmm. And like, you know, we live good lives in North America, like in Canada and the US, but then other parts of the world, people are abused. Our fellow countrymen, Kababayan, are abused. That's why for me, I was so adamant about doing that. But then I said, oh, so now I got to see the limits. I got pushed by the State Department of both sides. So I said, okay, you can push me there. That was back in 2016. But someday, if I'm a lawmaker, now what are you going to do?
See, that's a nice word, you know, lawmaker.
Yeah.
Because that's what you are going to be.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I hope from your words, you know, to the voters out there and to the ballots. And honestly, that's why I wake up every day. I've been so tired in this whole process. Like, it's really been a difficult journey in terms of just like physically tired. But when I see everyone's face and I see the enjoyment and the true wholehearted support. And of course, I've met some people who didn't like me along the way, but like, you know, they got to know me and they ended up changing their mind too.
Right,
so
right.
I hope to just bring that mentality everywhere.
And
so.
To help with regard to fund, with your funds, where can they go?
Actually, what I would like people to do is go to the website. It's kurtjose.com. It's just KURTJOSE. The most important right now is not even just funds. It's get me past March, because election day is March 5th. And in this primary, it's the top two vote getters. You don't have to be Democrat. You don't have to be Republican. It's just whoever gets the top two votes. So if I get pushed through March, that then takes me on to the November general election. So when you vote for president, you'll also be voting for congressman. So I just want to make it there. And push. That's the best way anyone can support me, is spread the word. Because whether you're someone who lives in, you know, Pasadena, Gardena,
yes,
or anywhere else, I'm sure you have a friend somewhere out there who's in the district. And I actually have all the districts on my website. We also have information for voting. Because actually, one thing I should probably bring up is, I've met a lot of people and they're like, I don't know how to vote. Or I voted back in like the 80s, and I never really cared about it. So along with the woman who didn't want to vote, there was people who were like, how do you vote? And so we put that there. We have two links, one that goes to a voting center. You put your address, and that's LA County. That doesn't go to me. So you type in your address, and you can figure out what's the closest one to you. It shows the hours and how busy it is.
And it's on your website.
Yes, it's on there right now, and people can go there, vote early. You know what I actually have been telling everyone? Turn it into a party.
Yeah.
I met a bunch of seniors over the weekend, old Filipinos, all retired, and they said, hey, we want to vote for you. We haven't voted since like Reagan. And I said, okay, that's good. Vote. And then you know what they said? One of the voting centers is behind a McDonald's. So I didn't tell them this. They did this on their own. They said, okay, we're going to meet up tomorrow. We're going to get McMuffins. And then after that, after we have coffee, let's go vote together.
Right.
So I said, man, I want to join you. I like McMuffins. Like, you know, I'm telling people, make it fun.
Yeah.
You know, even if you get your friends, get together, be like, hey, before we go to this trivia night, before we go to this concert, let's just all go vote. I know it doesn't sound like that much fun, but if you make it fun, you know, I'm not going to encourage you to go be drunk at the polling center, but like, but go out and, you know, turn it into a fun activity. Like, and also don't take it so seriously. Like, just try and learn about all the different issues and turn it into, you know, take a boring activity and make it fun.
Yeah.
You know, like what they did. I didn't even offer that to them. I was like, hey, that's a really good idea, actually. You know, So yeah, we have that information there. And like for people who didn't register on February 20th, because that was the deadline, they could still go to a voting center and vote in person.
Right.
And you can vote early. You can vote by mail if you have your ballot and drop it off. We also have a link that shows all the centers to drop it off. Or come out on March 5th if you want the full feel of like Super Tuesday and voting in the U.S.
So there is no excuse.
No, there's not really. That's why I tell people, I'm like, don't wait till March 5th, because when you wait till March 5th, then you're like, oh, I got out of work, I'm running late.
Right.
Whereas if you're on the weekend, you're having fun, hey, let's go, you know. Let's go do this right now. Maybe while you're running errands, the voting center is right near you. So, and I will say, even though it sounds cliche, that's the best way for your voice to be heard.
It's true.
Yeah.
It's our right.
It is. And, you know, whether you dislike politicians, you dislike politics, that's really one of the only ways that could be heard. Because, yeah, of course, you can protest, but protest still needs to get to a policy proposal.
Yes.
And from there, we move on. And if we don't get to that part where it's policy proposal, then, you know, what else are we going to do? But that's why, you know, you leave that to me, you put that on my back, and I'm going to make sure that all of you are represented properly. So,
it's a final question. Mm-hmm. Is your voice loud?
Yes, it is.
Ladies and gentlemen, Kurt Jose. We'll see you at the polling place. Don't forget, March 5, guys. And go to www.kurtjose.com. We'll post everything in the description. And come on, let's get Kurt to Congress.
Come out, everyone.